Welcome to the Drop Time Report. Turn up the volume and listen to amazing stories about big bucks and the hunters who harvested them. Here is your host, outdoor writer, Tracy Breen.
On this week's episode of the Drop Time Report, we're going to have on Matt Wakoyak out of Wisconsin. I've been trying to get Matt on the show for almost a year. He shot a giant last year in Wisconsin, just a jaw-dropping buck. Grosses right around 200 inches. Pretty interesting story how small the core area of this buck was, and so we're going to talk about that today. We're also going to talk about how he uses cedar posts to attract big bucks and attaches a licking branch and how effective that is. The awesome thing about that cedar post tactic is it's really inexpensive. Before we get Matt on the show, I'd like to thank my sponsors, Redneck Blinds. If you're in the market for an awesome blind, check out Redneck Blinds. They also have ghillie blinds. They don't just have fiberglass blinds. They have ghillie blinds that are soft-sided. They look awesome. They blend in with anything. Fourth Arrow Camera Arms, Windscent, makers of vaporized deer scent technology. Their unit actually vaporizes deer urine. It heats it up and vapes it. Independent testing by Tracker John with his bloodhounds. They're able to scent that vapor hundreds of yards away. So if you're looking to up your game as far as using mock scrapes and scents, check out Windscent. Morel Targets, makers of the high roller target. Huntworth Clothing, Huntworth Gear. I personally use a lot of Huntworth clothing. It's very inexpensive in comparison to a lot of the other hunting clothes out there. And if you're already set as far as hunting clothes go, check out their gloves. They're available at Walmart and Meijer and a lot of other chains. And they're really nice gloves for a fraction of the cost of the competition out there. Pine Ridge Archery, makers of the Nitro Vein, Lucky Buck Mineral, Grim Reaper Broadheads, Schaefer Performance Archery, makers of the XV Arrow Rest, Illinois Connection Outfitters in Pike and Brown County. Outdoorsmen's, they make some great American-made backpacks and tripods for glass and bucks and bulls that are super lightweight. And Wilderness Athlete. A lot of us need to shed a few pounds. If you're looking to shed a few pounds, check out wildernessathlete.com. They make a variety of nutritional products. My favorite is their Hydrate and Recover drink. It has very little calories, not much sugar at all, so it can greatly reduce the amount of sugar you're taking in a day. Enter Drop 10 at checkout and get a discount. Now let's go ahead and get Matt on the show. Welcome to the Drop 10 Report, Matt. How are you today?
Hey, I'm great. How are you?
Oh, hanging in there. Deer season's coming fast and furious, so hopefully you'll be able to kill another giant this year, but it'll be hard to beat last year's buck, huh?
Yeah, it'll be tough to beat, but I'm excited for the season. Opening day in Wisconsin is tomorrow, so I'll be heading up north after work today.
Oh, cool. So tell us a little bit about the buck you killed last year. Did he have a name, and what was his score, those kind of things?
Yeah, so we named the buck Prince. The story behind that is we had a picture of him back in 2017, two seasons before I killed him, and he was a really young deer with a bigger rack. So I kind of joked with my neighbors and my brother. I said, one day that deer is going to be a king, and so for now we're going to call him Prince.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, so that's kind of how he got his name. And so the gross non-typical score on the deer ended up being 204 ace. So no deductions, green score, pretty much the day after I shot him. And then the book score, I had him scored as a typical for the books, and unfortunately he had a lot of deductions. So I think his net score was right around 177 as a typical.
Okay.
So that's after all the deductions and everything.
Still not too shabby, huh?
No, not too shabby.
How old do you figure the deer was?
So it was kind of a back and forth debate with a lot of people. Just based on body size and the history we have with other deer around our farm and the size of his body, we guessed that he was a 4.5.
Okay.
And obviously there was a debate. A lot of people thought, you know, this deer's got to be 5.5. But so after we shot him, I actually had four or five people look at the teeth and give me their best guesses, guys who knew what they were doing. And I think three or four of the guys said 4.5 and one said 5. So
Okay.
I guess we kind of took the 4.5 road.
Sure. Yeah, that's one heck of a buck for 4.5. But, you know, Wisconsin, it's no secret, you know, you're living in the land of giants for sure.
Right. So that's, yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, we're very blessed for which we get to hunt. So, yep.
Now, how big a piece of property are you hunting on?
We hunt about 100 acres.
Okay. And is there a lot of pressure on the ground around you?
Not really. Everybody, we're really close with everybody who hunts around us, and they all got pretty good sized farms, and not many people hunt those farms. So, I mean, there's definitely pressure. You know, everyone's a big hunter out there, and they all hunt hard, but they also hunt smart, and there's not too many people on small chunks of land. So,
okay. Now, so has everybody kind of had this buck on the radar and was hoping to get lucky?
We had one neighbor who we're really close with and we share all our pictures with, and they were getting pictures of this deer, but not anywhere close to as much as us. And then I think there was actually only one other neighbor we know of, and they had one picture of him. So the deer, I mean, he was a big homebody. He did everything on our property, and he rarely left. Once in a while in the rut, like I said, one of the other neighbors would get a quick picture of him or something, and in that way. So people knew about him. I mean, we shared the picture with a couple neighbors, and people definitely knew about the deer, but not many people were going to have a great opportunity at him besides us.
Okay. Now, had you hunted him multiple years, or was this the first year you had really set out to kill him?
I would say in 2018, it was kind of like, you know, it was one of those deals where if he comes in, I don't know what I'm going to do. We actually found one of the sheds in 2018, and my neighbor found the other one. He ended up giving it to me. And we scored the sheds with a guess of about a 17-inch spread, and it came out to about 165 in 2018.
Okay.
And so I probably would have pulled the trigger on him, not knowing whether he was 3.5 or 4.5. If I knew for sure he was 3.5, I probably would have passed, but we really didn't know. And so I probably would have shot him. I ended up seeing him 7 times in the 2018 season, and I had a lot of close encounters, but no shots at the bull. And then I had him 20 yards in front of me with a gun on opening day in 2018, but it was 4 minutes before shooting light, so I obviously didn't take the shot.
Okay. Interesting. Now, the first year you saw him, how big do you think he was then? Was he 2.5 the first year, or 3.5, do you figure?
My neighbors have his sheds from 2017. We're guessing he was a 2.5 that year, and I think we ended up scoring him at about 144 inches as a 2.5-year-old.
Wow, isn't that something?
It was pretty crazy. I mean, the trail cam pics we have of him that year, his body, at least for where we hunt, his body was just so tiny for what a 3.5 or 4.5-year-old deer should look like. And so that's kind of why we went with 2.5. And that was the first year we had trail camera pictures of him. And usually by us, if a deer's mature 3.5 plus, we kind of have known that deer for a while. And that was the first we've seen him. So we figured he had to be pretty young.
Now, do you have that kind of genetics historically? I mean, are you guys regularly seeing bucks of that caliber, or do you consider him kind of a freak of nature?
You know, I guess anywhere you go, you know, a 200-inch deer is kind of like, it's going to be crazy no matter where you hunt, you know, whether you have a lot of big deer. But I would say generally a lot of our mature deer are going like 150 to 170, and then obviously you get your once in a while that are over 170, and then to have an opportunity at 200-inch deer is just pretty incredible.
Yeah.
You know, we obviously don't see deer like that all the time. We see a lot of big deer, but that one was just a little bigger. So,
but at 2.5, I mean, you, like you said, you called him Prince. You could tell already, yeah, like, man, if this deer hits 4 or 5, he's really going to be something.
So in that aspect, I would definitely say as a 2.5, no, we don't see 2.5-year-old deer around our farm with those genetics all the time. I mean, right away, we knew he was going to be special, just based on that picture of him. So Yeah, I guess the answer to that is no. We don't see a lot of 2.5s that are pushing 140. We get a lot of them in the 120 to 130 inch range, and that's not too uncommon, but he was really big for how young he was. So,
now, do you feel like as he aged, his core area shrunk like a lot of research shows, or was he just a homebody from the get-go?
So the first year, 2017, we had him. He definitely moved around a lot more. Me and my brother filmed him out of the tree stand that year. We saw him a bunch in the woods. My neighbor saw him in the woods. So he definitely moved around a lot more as a 2.5. As a 3.5, he started to shrink a lot more. He definitely localized more on our farm, but my neighbors were still seeing him a little bit. And then the year I killed him, he was just 100. Nobody else was getting pictures of him. He was living on like 30 acres.
Wow.
So he definitely shrunk. And we historically see that in the area we hunt with our older deer. You know, they'll definitely centralize more in a smaller area as they get older.
Sure. Now, did you plant anything or do anything to hold him in that area?
So the first year we had him on camera in 2017, we really only had like one or two internal food plots. We kind of took over this farm not too long ago, so it was a work in progress. And as soon as we knew this deer was going to be really special, me and my brother kind of talked, and we were like, all right, you know, we got to do something here to make sure this deer wants to live on this farm. And so we had our good buddy come in. His name's Corey. He actually runs a company up north there by the name of High Tine Addiction, and he does a lot of dozer work. And we had him come in, and we kind of mapped out a bunch of food plots, a lot of internal food plots, a lot of minimal pressure food plots down low. And we had him put in, I think, 5 that year. So going into 2018 season, we had 5 new food plots, and they ended up playing a huge role in killing that deer. Most of them were in clover. We had some in beans and a few in brassicas, but those ended up playing a major role in putting that deer on the ground.
Now, go ahead.
So I would say the one in particular, I actually ended up killing him in this food plot. It was just a small maybe 30 by 30 food plot on the knoll of a ridge. So as deep in as you could get, all the way at the top of the hill, drops off steep on both sides. And, we had clover in there, and then we put, something we really believe in, our cedar pulse, with a scrape branch or a licking branch or whatever you want to call it. But
yes, Steve Bartella. Yeah. He's a Wisconsin native. Maybe you've heard of Steve Bartella. That's something he loves.
Yeah, definitely. And we've come to love it too. I mean, we put those in 2018, and we've never turned back. We kill most of our bucks off those, and they love them. It's just kind of a social gathering area, and everyone comes and checks out. And Prince was on that a lot. And that's actually how I ended up patterning him. And when I shot him, he was coming in to lick on that branch. So
break that down, because we don't talk about that much, but a lot of guys probably would be intrigued by that idea because it's fairly cheap, right? So you buy a cedar post, bury it in the ground, and just cut a licking branch and attach it with wire, or what are you doing?
Yeah, so basically what we do is sometimes you got to call around to find them, but I try to find a 3.5 inch or a 5 inch circumference round cedar post. You know, a lot of people are going to carry a square one, but you should try to go with round, because then the deer have the opportunity to rub on it if they want to. And sometimes they will. And we look for them in 8 foot length, and then we'll take a post hole digger. We'll mark the post 1.5 feet, and we'll dig 1.5 feet down and put it in there. And then you just, dump quickcrete around it and dump some water in there, and that'll solidify it in the ground. And then we take a 1 inch drill bit, drill a hole close to the top of it, kind of on a small angle. And we find we prefer red oak. It seems to hold its leaves longer after they're dead. So if you can find a red oak branch, that seems to be better. And we put it through the top, And there's a lot of ways you can secure it. I mean, a screw obviously is an easy way to screw through the branch into the wood. We've even taken two zip ties and crossed them and pinched it in there. And I will say, you can try to secure it the best you can, but you're going to get a couple of them ripped out throughout the season. We haven't found a way to prevent it. But for the most part, they work awesome.
How soon after you put it up do they start hitting it?
Right away. And we really haven't found a time of year that they don't hit it. I mean, we'll start putting branches in there as soon as spring rolls around, and immediately you'll have, you know, does licking it. And then obviously as it progresses, all the deer start to hit it because of the scent that's left on there. So, right. I mean, immediately the day after we put them up, they'll start hitting it. Wow. We make a little bit of a mock scrape under it.
Okay.
And then a lot of times we'll rake the dirt up a little bit and we'll kind of rub that dirt through the branches just to get a different smell in the air. I'm not sure if that makes a difference, but it's just something we've done. So.
Sure. So you put them out way ahead of time though. Like long before deer season.
We put them out, you know, usually anytime between spring and midsummer. We try to get them all in before the end of July. Our season here starts usually mid-September. So.
Okay. I didn't look closely at the picture. Was he in velvet then when you shot him or no?
He was not. He shed velvet about a week before, or he shed velvet about 2.5 weeks before I killed him.
Okay. Okay. So you killed him in September. Was he on a fairly typical, you know, feeding pattern then?
Yeah, so basically, I had a cell cam on this food plot because it's so deep in our timber. It's just a spot you can't really get to pull the chip. Unfortunately, we live 3.5 hours away from our farm. So it's kind of hard to pattern a deer early if you don't live up there. You're not able to pull your chips every so often. So we ran a cell cam on this food plot, and what was happening was about 100 yards to the east, there was a big grain field. It was all standing beams. And in between that grain field and where he bedded, I had this clover plot, and it was kind of inevitable that he would walk through this clover plot and eat some clover and hit the licking branch before he hit the big fields. So it kind of set up perfect. So he would get up to go to the big grain, and then he would stop in the clover plot for a while and check it out.
Okay. What day did you kill the buck?
I killed him on September 28th.
Okay. So a couple weeks after season then.
Yeah. I believe opening day that year was September 14th.
Okay. Now, how many encounters did you have up to killing him? Break down the hunt itself the day you killed him.
Okay. I guess to start on that, I had this deer pattern before opening day on September 14th, but he was coming in the morning. And obviously any whitetail hunter knows it's pretty dangerous to go after a buck in the morning, early season. But I knew this was a deer of a lifetime and I wasn't going to miss an opportunity. So opening morning, I got up super early. I tried to get to the stand, an hour before sunrise, and I was up there at about 5 a.m. and I actually spooked him out of the food plot, before sunrise. So that was pretty disheartening, and that was on the 14th. So, I texted my brother. He was up there with me. We immediately backed out. We drove 4 hours home and we weren't going to go back to the farm until we started getting pictures of him again. And it took about 10 days.
Oh my gosh.
So I spooked him out. I didn't see him on that food plot again for 10 days. And then fast forward, the Thursday before I killed him, I was sitting in a tree stand on a lease. And I had back home, and I got a cell cam picture of him, and he was in the food plot in shooting light. And that was the first I had seen him since I spooked him. So I kind of, you know, I got really excited and pulled on my phone. I looked at the forecast for up north, and I saw, all right, I got a cold front that's going to last about 2 to 3 days here. So I texted my boss. I was like, hey, I was like, I need Friday off. I'm going up north. I'm going to try to kill this deer again. He was super cool about it. He said, go ahead. So me and my brother drove up that Friday. We got ready to go for the night hunt on Friday, and it was a little bit warmer than we wanted. So we actually made the decision to not go in after him. I saw Saturday was going to be a little bit colder. And it ended up being the right decision. I didn't get any pictures of him in there Friday.
Okay.
So then Saturday came around. I think I got into that tree stand Saturday evening at about 2:30, somewhere between 2:30 and 3 p.m., which is pretty early. We had shooting light till 7:15. And in between 3 and 6 p.m., I think I had already seen 22 deer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So for an early season hunt, where we're from, I was on a small food source, so most of these deer were just cruising through the woods. It wasn't like I was sitting on a big field or anything. So it was a really high action hunt, and I kind of knew in the back of my head at that point that I was probably going to see this deer, and more than likely I was going to have an opportunity at him the way the deer were moving. So between 6 and 6:30, then the action kind of slowed down. My head was kind of spinning. I was like, man, how have I not seen this deer yet? You know, this is perfect. The deer are on their feet moving like crazy. And I think at about 6:30, I told myself, just stand up and get your bow. Cause if it's going to happen, it's going to happen here in the next 25 minutes. Sure enough, I stood up, I had my bow. I looked over my right shoulder, at about 6:45 where I knew he bedded, and, he was on his way right to the food plot. So he took a, he kind of got halfway to me, which was about 23 yards, and he kind of started to turn off like he wasn't going to come in. And I had one shot there, a really small shot window. And I was thinking to myself, man, do I take the shot here? Cause if he goes the other way, I'm not going to have another shot, or do I wait? And something told me to just wait. And sure enough, I waited a little bit, and he turned and he came right to me into the food plot. I think I had about a 10-yard shot, and the rest is history.
Now, did you think he was going to, or did he come to that cedar post then?
He was trying to get to the cedar post, but I stopped him and shot him about 5 yards short.
Okay. Okay.
I could have let him get to the cedar post, but the shot I had prior to him getting there was about 5 yards closer to me, so I decided to take the shot there.
Absolutely. Yeah, don't want to risk it, right?
No, there was no point in letting him get there. So,
was buck fever a factor, or were you a stone cold killer?
No, it was definitely a factor. I mean, I had encountered this deer so many times over the last, you know, over the previous 2 years that it was like, you know, it's kind of in my head. You just got to make this happen at this point. When he first stepped out that night, all I could see was a heavy wall of tines. And at that point I started shaking really bad. You know, I had buck fever, I'm not going to lie, but I had so much time between then and when he got to me that I was able to calm myself down. And to be honest, when I took the shot, I really wasn't too nervous at that point anymore. So.
Okay.
But it was nerve wracking in those 15 minutes that he took to get to me.
Oh, wow. 50. Yeah. That's so how big is this food plot you were running over?
Maybe 30 yards by 30 yards. It's a real small kill plot.
Okay.
So we kind of have destination food sources, and then we kind of scatter these little kill plots throughout our woods, and it seems to be really effective for us. So
now what makes it a kill plot for you? I mean, what you call a kill plot, is it the size? Do you have a certain shape? So, you know, they're forced to come into your setup, or what do you do?
Right. So basically the way we look at them is, I'm sure other guys have other names for them. It's just kind of something that we call them, but we basically will just clear really small areas in the timber where we know that these mature deer are going to feel safe, and we'll kind of shape them, in ways that maybe they can't see the whole food plot just by stepping into it on one side. You know, they got to walk around a little bit, or they got to go check it out, see what else is going on. So I guess basically they're just, you know, small little areas we clear out in the woods, and most of them are planted in clover or winter rye. or something that's pretty shade tolerant, because obviously a smaller food plot, you know, you're not clearing a lot of tree canopy for sunlight, so you kind of got to make what work, what you're going to plant work. So yeah, basically just small clearings where you think the mature deer are going to feel safe, and we try to tuck them in pretty close to bedding if we can.
Okay. So how far away from these plots, or this plot in particular, was he bedding?
It was about 75 yards.
So you're sneaking in like a cat then?
Yeah. Fortunately for us, the way the area we hunt is full of huge towering bluffs. So you kind of get to the top of one and it drops straight off the other side or vice versa. It kind of laid out perfect for me. I was able to sneak up the slow sloping side. The food plot was right on the top. And then he was bedding over the top on the very steep side. So he really had no chance of hearing me or seeing me. It kind of set up perfect. And that's kind of why we have that kill plot there, just for that reason. A lot of bucks tend to bed on that steep side over the top, so it lays out perfect for us.
Now, because these are remote, are you able to get a tractor to them and you know, plow the field under, or are you doing this by hand?
Yeah, we have a logging road system all throughout our woods. So there's some old trails where logging trucks, before we had the farm, used to come in and they used to use them, and then we just kind of keep those maintained. They're maybe as wide as a truck or a little bit wider, and we just cut them and mow them and keep them up. So we can get any machines in there. We can get tractors, no-till drills, four-wheelers, pretty much anything we need to get in there.
Okay. Now, how soon after this plot was established did this buck say, this is my home, this is where I'm going to bed?
The first year. We had that plot put in the summer of 2018, and throughout the fall of 2018, he hammered that plot. He was in there constantly, and then rolling into 2019, he was doing the same thing.
So here we are, 2020. Has a buck replaced him? I mean, do you have another good buck coming?
Yeah, we have a few really good bucks on camera this year. A lot of them are using that same food plot. There's just something about it. Just tucks really close in the bedding, and it's kind of in their way to the big grain. So they're going to stop in there and check out what's going on. So we're looking forward to this year, and definitely got some shooters on the list. We're going to go up this weekend and see what happens.
Now, with a food plot being that small, do you ever have an overbrowse situation?
No, not too bad. I mean, they pound it a lot in summer. And the clover regenerates, so it'll just keep growing. We frost seed our plots every 3 years to make sure that they keep growing.
Okay.
So.
Very cool. Just break down your equipment. I just like to, share that with listeners. I'm kind of a gear junkie, so, you know, what bow were you using?
Yeah, so I was shooting a Max Matthews No Cam.
Okay.
I draw 68 pounds, I believe. And then I shoot Maxima Red Arrows.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And
how about Broadhead?
G5 Dead Meats.
Okay. Cool. Now, you mentioned you record your hunt. Do you happen to have a fourth arrow camera arm, or are you using a Muddy or something like that?
So it's funny you mentioned that. I actually, after we killed this deer, I started getting a lot of attention for the deer, and me and my buddies have been looking for an excuse to start an outdoor page and a YouTube channel, and we started one this year called Brothers Midwest Productions. So we're going to be doing a lot of filming this year. We've released a few videos so far. But yeah, we're filming with four, we all have fourth arrow camera arms. So
now, did you film that? Did you film this hunt where you killed the big buck or no? Oh, bummer.
Unfortunately, I didn't film that hunt. We were kind of filming freelance prior to this year, and this year we're pretty dedicated, so we're going to be filming every hunt from here on out.
Very cool. Cool.
Oh.
Well, that's awesome. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to come on, and I'm sure with opening day this weekend, I'm sure you're excited and probably won't sleep much tonight, huh?
Nope, not at all. Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for telling your story.
Yep. Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye. It was great having Matt on the show this week. Stay tuned for next week's episode. We're going to have on Shane Simpson from callingallturkeys.com. He also has the Cali Chronicles, which is a YouTube show where he highlights tracking bucks with his hound. Shane is known for traveling all over North America to chase turkeys. He does most of it on a budget, but we're going to mostly talk about whitetails. He's been hanging out with the Hunting Public show quite a bit and hunting with them, so we're going to highlight some of his traveling adventures from this year. And last, to learn more about me, visit my website, TracyBreen.com, TracyBreen.com. I'd also appreciate a positive Google review or iTunes review. That just makes a huge difference for the podcast. So if you could go ahead and do that, appreciate it. Until next time, have a great day and God bless.